Welcome to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin. Bob Dancer is America's premier video poker writer and teacher. He's written 10 books, including Video Poker for the Intelligent Beginner and the best-selling Million Dollar Video Poker. He helped develop the computer software Video Poker for Winners, and in 2004, he was inducted into the Video Poker Hall of Fame. Richard Munchkin has been a professional Advantage player for over 30 years and is in the Blackjack Hall of Fame. His book, Gambling Wizards, Conversations with the World's Greatest Gamblers, is a testament to the many ways you can succeed at gambling. The goal of the show is that you'll be a more knowledgeable gambler tomorrow than you were yesterday. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good evening. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. My name is Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Our guest tonight is Barry Meadow, author of Blackjack Autumn. 15 years ago, Meadow spent a couple of months playing blackjack in every casino in the state of Nevada that offered blackjack, about 200 of them. We'll be talking to Barry shortly. In my most recent Tuesday blog on the LasVegasAdvisor.com, I wrote about somebody I didn't really know, but he had taken one of my free classes several years ago, and he came up to me while I was playing at a casino. He kept pestering me with question after question and wouldn't take the hint that I was working. He seemed to believe that since he had purchased one book from me years ago, he had the right to my undivided attention. Munch, you had a reaction to this article, yes?
Oh, yeah. I had kind of a strong reaction. It actually shows a real difference between, blackjack and other table game players and video poker players. For blackjack players, this is a huge no-no. I mean, you should never, ever go talk to another player in a casino. There's just too many things that can go wrong. Either he could have heat, you could have heat, and you can, infect each other with your heat. And I actually had an incident where I got 86'd from a casino just because somebody came up and talked to me. The wrong guy. He apparently was being watched by surveillance, and they saw him talk to me, even though I sort of acted like he had asked me the time and told him to get away from me. But I ended up getting 86 over it. So, yeah, you should just never do it.
I might be a special case of that in that I teach classes in casinos, and I'm sort of a public figure. So when players come up to me in casinos, I will generally talk to them. Casinos know who I am. But a lot of other video poker players frequently use the same, don't talk to me in casinos. You might nod your head indicating, hi, how you doing? I'll talk to you some other time. But you generally
right.
don't.
And, sometimes people will wait and kind of do it in the bathroom where there are no cameras that can see you. But, you don't know who might be in a stall that can overhear your conversation or who might walk in the middle of a conversation. Usually it's just better not to do it.
All right. There's a dispute in Tunica, Mississippi, between Bally's and Resorts, which are casinos, and a player. It seems that this player was playing this slot machine really, 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 really heavily, and he won something like 3 drawings in a row. Won like $40,000 of free play on the first one and $30,000 on the next one, and won the third one, although he had been 86 from the casino before the third drawing took place. And the casino basically said, you're not even going to get the free play you haven't already done, so just beat it, you're trespassed, you're out of here. So hard to believe, but the player sued. And the casino said there was something wrong with the machine and that the machine was manufactured or designed by the company that this player worked for, and it was set to give extra drawing tickets or extra payouts or something of that nature. And so the casino said, they were scamming us and we don't have to pay. And so it's been appealed and back and forth. So we really don't know all the facts of yet. I'd eventually like to hear how it turned out. I can see both sides of this. What is your reaction, Munch?
Yeah, you know, initially I missed that that the guy worked at the company that had manufactured the machine. You know, that sort of...
That's kind of a key point
you
here.
You know, makes it look a little bit funky. You know, if this were simply the casino's error, then I think it's ridiculous. I mean, casinos are prone to do this kind of thing, overreact. And but boy, you know, the fact that he worked for the company that, you know, manufactured the machine, that it, yeah, I'd love to know more details on exactly what happened here. But, you know, it may be a case of the casino cheating the patron, or maybe the patron was cheating the casino. I don't know. We'll have to see.
All right. There was
a lot of cheating news this week.
Yeah, in the category of stupid high rollers, there is this football player who works for Denver Broncos. I think his name is Quentin Carter. So apparently, he pass posted a $5 chip on a winning craps bet at one of the Vegas casinos, and is arrested felony charges. Although I'm not sure a $5 would constitute a felony. This is a guy who, I don't know what his salary is, but the league minimum is something like $250,000. So by most people's standards, this guy's a rich dude. And he cheats, trying to cheat the casino out of $5. This has got to be one of the dumbest things ever.
Yep. Really, really ridiculous. I mean, but... Yeah.
Maybe he was hitting the head too many times. What do you think?
Maybe. I thought the league minimum was even more than that. Maybe I was thinking of the NBA. But, yeah, I mean, he's got to be making a lot of money. And to do that over $5, just...
And the commissioner of that league, Roger Goodell, has kind of taken a no-tolerance policy for run-ins with the law. And so there's a good chance the punishment will cost more than $5.
Now, the most interesting cheating story of the week comes out of Australia, where apparently at the Crown Casino in Melbourne, this is the largest amount I've ever heard of somebody scamming from a casino, $32 million. And supposedly they had tapped into the surveillance cameras, but it doesn't really make clear what exactly information they were getting from the surveillance cameras. But, you know, it's interesting because certainly, you know, late at night over many cocktails, you know, teammates of mine, we've certainly had this discussion. Wow, what if we could get into the surveillance cameras, you know?
Yeah, well, what kind of things could you do with surveillance cameras?
Well, I guess about the lowest edge thing you could do would be to just count down shoes and be able to call a big player into any shoe on the on the casino floor. But yeah, I don't know what they could do that could give them a big enough edge to, you know, to score $32 million.
I mean, like when you see live poker on TV, they have a whole card cams. And of course, if you could see a dealer's hole card, that would be interesting. Or that would be useful. But most casinos' surveillance wouldn't be set up with that.
Right, right. And I just think it would be really hard to win that amount of money at blackjack. I mean, to take off money that huge. I'm just guessing it had to be something at baccarat. So maybe there was something more involved than just the cameras, you know, maybe there was something involved with the dealers, you know, like the Tran gang kind of thing. But yeah, I don't know. We'll have to see. We'll have to wait for more info.
But I don't think it was quite as bad as the $32 million, because 32 million Australian is only 31 million US. So it's really not that
yeah.
bad.
Right.
And I just made up that number. I have no idea if it's right or not.
Right.
Now,
I mean, it takes me months to earn that much. So.
Yeah. It's, yeah. Yeah, you and me both for sure. Now, for those of you who don't have enough worms in your diet, Dennis Rodman has made the news again this week. He went to Vatican City to representing a London bookie, PaddyPower.com. Rodman was trying to get people to bet on who's going to be the next Pope. Dennis himself was sure a black man would be selected. I guess you could say he was betting on black. Turns out Rodman was wrong. Duh, yeah. Go figure. What do you think about all this, Richard?
You know, I think it's great. I also think maybe, you know, 7 or 8 years ago, it was Golden Palace that was getting all the publicity for their crazy publicity stunts. So maybe they have the same PR people. You know, back then they bought the grilled cheese sandwich with the face of Jesus on it and things like that. I think it's good because it puts internet gambling front and center in the news and sort of reminds everybody that we should be able to do this here in the United States. So, you know, I think the more kind of publicity that it gets, I think the better it is. I'd certainly like to be able to bet on things like that here in the U.S.
Yeah, and Rodman is somebody who will gather attention. He's
right.
He's like 7 foot tall, and he's got tattoos and piercings and yellow
hair,
or sometimes pink, and and it can't hurt his reputation. So I think it's pretty good. All right. So anyway, good. Now, another thing, briefly, is a player who won $1,000 from a casino in Atlantic City apparently has the option of taking it as free play. This guy does not play video poker, which is not a sin, but he wants to know the best game to play, best video poker game to play if you're a non-player. And this is not an easy question to answer. Part of it has to do with every casino has a different mix of games. So if you're always going to recommend jacks are better, well, jacks are better at some casinos is better than jacks are better at another casino. Or one of the things you might...
Yeah, but by the same token, I mean, it's clear he would want to play video poker as opposed to a slot machine or even if they have those sort of...
It's not clear to me.
Although if they had those blackjack machines that count as a slot machine, I guess that would be another option.
And in Vegas, there are several casinos that have craps machines. So you're basically playing craps, and you can lay odds and stuff or take odds, depending on which side you have. So there so those might be a better game to play, because playing video poker badly is about the same as probably a dollar real slot machine. Another option would be to, a lot of people know other players in the casino. And so even if he doesn't play video poker, he might know somebody who does. And so for something like $50, which would be 0.5% for $1,000, he might have a guy sit next to him and tell him what to do. And that
that's $5 would be 0.5%.
All right, so it's 5%. Good. $5 is probably not enough to attract me to sit by him for an hour. So,
no, but if you can find a crap machine where it'll allow you to take odds, you're better off than you would be playing video poker.
Well, even if it didn't, it's a 98.6 game. So even if it didn't have odds, that would be better than any slot machine and better than what a video poker player could play.
Right.
There is a website on called vpfree2.com that lists the best video poker games in every casino in the country. And so at least that way you could find out which is the best game to play if you were just going to do the best you had. All right, let's talk to Barry Meadow. About 15 years ago, Barry Meadow decided to take a 2-month-long excursion of Nevada, playing in every casino in the state that offered blackjack. Blackjack Autumn is the tale of that excursion. Gamblers will recognize the highs and lows and will sympathize with Barry's irrational fascination with slot machines and laugh at many of his descriptions. Barry Meadows, welcome to Gambling with an Edge.
Hey, Bob and Rich, how are you guys doing?
Great. Good to hear from you, Barry.
Very good. All right. Now, you had to leave a career, a son, and a fiancé for an extended length of time for your gambling odyssey. There was always a risk that your career, your son, and or your fiancé would find out they could do quite well without you. Thank you very much. Are you glad you took this trip, and would you ever do it again?
Well, you know, there's never a perfect time to take a trip. The last 2 months where you're going by yourself and you're away from everybody you care about. But sometimes you have to take a leap and just do it. I'm glad I got to make such a trip. If I had to do all over again, I definitely would do it.
Why did you do it?
Because I don't think it had been done. People had played in various casinos, and there were reports of people taking trips. But I said, you know what? I think it's time to visit every single casino in the state, most of which I had no idea where they were or what they were like. And so it was an adventure story. It was not just a story about gambling. It's an adventure story as well.
Did you have a book deal ahead of time, or was your idea to, you know, do it, write a book about it, and see if you could get a deal?
No, my idea was to take notes as I did it, and if it turned out to be a book, great. But I know I had no deal. I had no idea what would happen. I had no idea how long the trip was going to take, whether I was going to win or lose, whether I'd get robbed, whether I'd get barred from every casino in the state. I had no idea. And I think sometimes in life you've got to take chances like this and have no idea what you're doing.
Now, a number of casinos have opened, shut, changed names, or something since you took the trip. Mostly there's a different set of employees working at these casinos now than when you did it 15 years ago. And you're not going to end up with the same score if you did it again. If you did this in 2013, how do you think your experience would be different than it was 15 years ago?
There are a lot more of those vile 6-to-5 unplayable blackjack games around these days. So there are fewer playable games. And, of course, the number of blackjack tables has dropped drastically. It's down something like there's maybe 4,000 blackjack tables in the state today. There were 5,000 about a dozen years ago. And a lot of those casinos are gone. Big places like the Sahara, Stardust, they're gone. Little crummy places like the Klondike and the Western are gone. But when you're gambling, even if you have an advantage, you never know how a particular hour or day or month is going to turn out, and you guys know that better than anybody else. I mean, maybe I'd win, maybe I'd lose. It's hard to say.
Now, other than your score, like whether you won or lost, what casinos did you enjoy most on your trip?
You could not beat the Bird Farm in Fallon for the atmosphere.
The Bird Farm?
It's long gone now, but it was a bar with a $5 maximum bet. So, I mean, you couldn't win very much, obviously. I sat down and started playing with a young dealer who dealt a few hands. And then in the middle of the game, he got up, he walked over to the other side of the table and started playing. He became a player. The regular dealer came back and dealt the rest of the shoe. He had a glass of scotch in one hand and a cigarette dangling from his lips. So that was a memorable place. And then of course, you know, for winning, there was a station house in Tonopah. There was a single gate dame that was dealt all the way to the bottom, which, of course, nobody's seen a game like that in God knows how long. One time, the dealer had two cards left and an ace up. I knew that both the remaining cards were picture cards. So when the dealer said, "Do you want insurance?" I took a pretty good shot by saying yes. So there were certainly experiences like that in very strange locations around the state.
Now, the flip side of the same question, and then I'll let Munchkin sneak in, which ones did you enjoy the least?
Well, there were more than a few places, and if you raised your bid at all, the dealer would yell out checks, and in moments your table would be surrounded by pit employees who previously had shown absolutely no interest in your existence. Some of these places would sweat the action so badly, you felt as if you won $100, they'd have to fire half the staff. So in those paranoid-type games, blackjack was less than fun, and there certainly were plenty of them around the state.
You know, there are quite a few of these little places like Sharky's or you know, in Needles, where they just have one table, And it's not open most of the time. So what did you do? Did you arrange to get there on a weekend when that one table would be open?
Sometimes they have limited hours. They might be open only on a Friday and Saturday. They might be open only at night. I can tell you, sadly, the Sharkies is no longer with us. Since I was just up in Reno a couple of months ago, I decided to take a trip by myself and took off for a weekend and played every casino around Reno and Sparks and Minden, and I wound up at the Topaz Lake Lodge enjoying a steak overlooking the water before my plane had to leave. So they're still around, but some of them, the games are limited. I think that would be a safe statement.
So when you went there, did you just have to wait? Like if you got there on a Wednesday, you would just wait around for 2 days until the weekend for it to open? Or what did you do?
Well, usually what I did is I would play. I'd often play in the morning, or I'd go touring around the neighborhood. I would go to a museum, or I'd drive around, see what the place was like, talk to people. And then in the afternoon, I would travel to a place, so I would arrive later in the day, because later in the day was when all the games were open. So you might go to a place, and 10 o'clock in the morning, the game was closed, but by 5 o'clock, it was open. So I'd go in and start playing then. So there were a couple of places that only had machines. They were at that time called blackjack blitz machines. So there were a couple of places I played those machines. But generally, except for one, I was never able to find, there was a game in one town I never was able to find, but I was able to go to 192 casinos and play blackjack.
192 casinos in 40 days? 60 days?
No, it was 60 days. I was playing every day, 60 days. And sometimes I play in one or two casinos a day, and sometimes when I was in Las Vegas, I played a whole bunch. So I didn't have a set schedule. I had a general path of where I was going to go, but exactly how long I would be in each place, who knows? I mean, Tonopah, I was going to play there one day. I stayed there 3 days because the game was so good. And other places I thought I'd be longer. I said, boy, I can't wait to get out of this place. So you never knew what was going to happen.
Now, you took this trip solo practitioner, so to speak. You're all by yourself. Having a friend with you has costs and benefits. Are you glad you went alone? If you did it again, would you go alone?
If you go with a friend, you can double team some casinos. You could make a mini team. One person keeps the count. The other one jumps in on good counts to play the real money. You can also play to a higher bankroll if you both put up the same amount of money. And, of course, you have someone to discuss the highs and lows of the day with, which is nice. So you're not lonely. But let's face it, anytime you go on a trip with anyone, you both have to have the same goals. What if one person wants to stay longer somewhere? What if your friend starts losing consistency while you're winning, or vice versa? What if you start arguing and you have to endure a long car trip to somewhere with that person? Although, I guess that's true when you're married, too. So there's certainly pluses and minuses. But I think I would go alone. I like to do things by myself very often. Yesterday, I went to the Indian Wells tennis tournament to see all these great players, Nadal and Federer and everybody, and I watched tennis for 13 hours by myself. So call me strange, but I like doing stuff like that.
I think that has a lot to do with people's personalities. I'm definitely the opposite of you. I would much rather travel with somebody. Just, you know, I mean, again, that's just my personality. I've often said if I had to play alone, I don't think I would play.
But part
I think
of
most
it...
people are social. They do enjoy playing with other people, talking with other people. I'm kind of a loner. It doesn't bother me. I mean, for years when I was betting on the horses every day, I'd stay in my office. I'd have my computer and my TV as my companions all day. I never talked to anybody, and I was fine with it.
And Richard, do you have three or four or six good partners, people who you partnered with before and would happily do it again? So you have this marriage, so to speak. Not everybody has that number of people that they can trust and enjoy.
Sure.
Well, it's not a right or wrong. Like Richard said, you have to understand your own personality. And for some people, being by themselves for an extended period of time is not, you know, they're happy if they go to the store to buy something, maybe for an hour, but they don't want to spend day or week or month alone. And I think you have to feel like that's okay for you to be able to do something like this. And for a lot of people, that isn't, and that's fine. You have to know who you are.
Yeah. Now back then, the communication among the casinos was not as good as it is now. But did you have problems with being flyered with one casino communicating to other casinos that you were out there on the road?
Not at that time. There were individual casinos that told me, please don't ever come back here. But there was no group effort to do so. It's not like today where, I've been kicked out of a place now and I can't go to any of those casinos that are in the same group anymore. So things are a little bit different. It was a little bit more wide open in those times than it is now. Now you've got counter capture software. You've got people hired to stop counters. You've got casinos that train their pit bosses to count. And they're spending zillions to prevent what? Probably they're spending way more than they're actually losing. I mean, if I had a bet. Plus, there are plenty of easy ways to prevent people from counting anyway. You don't have to hire anybody, but I don't know. What can I say? Not everybody's as smart as everybody else.
Now, the book has a subtitle that mentions splitting tens in Winnemucca. I love saying Winnemucca. Now, the afterword mentions splitting tens in Winnemucca, as does the front cover of the book and the back cover of the book. However, in the few pages that you used to describe your stop in that town, never was splitting tens mentioned. Inquiring minds need to know, did you split tens in Winnemucca?
I certainly did split tens in Winnemucca and a few other places too. But that was only when the count was high enough and it looked like either I was steaming to get back losses or I was getting greedy to go for a big win. If it was a marginal decision, I just did on the 20 like you're supposed to do unless you're an idiot. So, yes, that did happen. And it happened in a number of places. Usually I got strange looks from the pit. But you got to play according to the optional way to play the game.
And so presumably it was originally written in your notes, and somehow in the editing process that paragraph got deleted.
But I'd like to blame the editor, but I have to blame myself for not deleting that, because I certainly did split tens there, and I enjoyed the game because I remember starting off, this is not looking good here, and then suddenly it all turned around. So luckily I already had my comps there by then.
Are you still playing much blackjack now?
I do, but now it's more for fun. It's not like it was in the old days. Now, every once in a while, I live in Southern California, so every once in a while I'll say, well, I think today's a good day for a casino run. So I'll go out to places like the Golden Acorn or Pechanga or Sequan or any place down here, and I'll just drive around all day. And by the time I get back, it's late at night and I'm exhausted. I don't need to play for a while. And I still go to Las Vegas every once in a while and play. And as I mentioned, I did take a trip to Reno not too long ago. So every once in a while I say, yeah, it might be kind of fun to play for a day or two. But now it's not like, the old days where many years before that book came out, I used to have to fly there to make money to pay my rent. With that, that's a lot of pressure. It's not like, if you lose and lose a couple hundred dollars, who cares? Back in the old days, back in the late 70s and early 80s, when I didn't have a job and I was living in California, I used to fly up to Vegas and play, and I keep playing until I got ahead, and sometimes that would take several days.
Sometimes it can take a lot longer than that.
Yes, sometimes you just dig yourself into a big hole.
Well, at that time, I was playing for very small stakes, so it was, if I won $300 on a trip, great, now I can pay the rent for the month. So it's not the same as when you're playing for actual money and you're playing even on a team, and the team can be losing for months. That's a little more serious.
Well, back then,
I like to play for fun. You know, I do enjoy it, and I do like to play for fun, and I do play for fun.
You mentioned in your book that you would pick up coupon books wherever you could, and your net profit was several hundred dollars higher because of doing the coupon books. Back when I was playing in the early 90s and the 80s and early 90s, I abused coupon books, actually. I'm thinking there are not as many today as there used to be. Is that your experience, or do you know?
There's not as many today, but using a coupon is like finding money on the street. I mean, what's the downside? If the casino is paying you some kind of bonus to play, why not take it? I mean, I do love casino promotions and deals. In fact, a couple of days ago when I was, after the tennis matches were over, it was pretty late. I said, you know what, I think I want to go out for some Chinese food. So I drove over to the Fantasy Springs Casino, which was nearby, where I had dinner. And as I left the restaurant, I was sitting back to my car, I saw a sign that said, it was a promotional deal for new players. If you signed up, you had to play $20 of your own money on the slots. Then they'd give you $30 in free play, and you could keep all the winnings after that $30. So I quickly did the math. I figured, okay, maybe 90% payback on the slots. I'd lose $2 on my original money, but I'd make 27 on the free play for a net profit of $25. And that's exactly what happened. The whole deal from sign up to exit took 10 minutes, and I had $25 in my pocket. I was excited and happy.
But you only can do that once per place.
Yes.
You know, up at John Esquaga's Nugget, I used to play with a good friend who was kind of notoriously tight. And, you know, we at John Esquaga's Nugget, every time you ate in the restaurant, they would give you – you know, coupons on your way out. So we would always go there for breakfast, and he would go to the blackjack table, and, you know, he might, his first bet might be $200 with a coupon that was, you know, like a $5 match play or whatever. So yeah, it didn't matter that he was betting $200 or $300 on the hand. He was going to pick up
Richard,
that extra $250 for his coupon.
Exactly. I've done exactly the same thing where I bet a couple hundred dollars and I got a coupon that's worth like $10. You know, looking at me,
I
say, "You really want to do this?" I go, "Yes, I do."
Yes, and usually one per day means one per dealer.
Right.
Well, yeah. Then you have to walk over to different sections of the casino, or you play at different times. So sometimes you can score some actual money doing this. I mean, you're not going to get rich, but every dollar helps, especially if you're losing. It's nice.
Well,
to be able to
I read about these guys, you know, who. Have a trunk full of American casino guides because apparently there are a lot of good coupons in there. And so they buy many copies of the book just for all the coupons.
Well, sometimes though, when you use, cause I have used the coupons in the American casino guide and some of them you need to elect, but the sign up, they'll put down that you signed up in that from the American casino guides. You can only use it once at that particular place. But, you know, expanding on what you're saying, the value of comps is extremely important, not just the coupons, but the comps as well. I mean, if you're staying at a hotel and they give you the room and maybe they give you meals, that adds up to quite a bit of value if you were going to go there anyway. So I think it's important for all players to try to use their comps and coupons because either it'll increase their profit or it'll cut their losses. And these odds, they're fun to use anyway.
This book, Blackjack Autumn, is a fun read. Barry has an off-the-wall sense of humor, and you'll find yourself chuckling as you read it. The winnings and losings and stuff will ring true to any gambler. Now, Barry, did you learn anything about yourself while you were on this two-month odyssey?
That's one of the interesting things about going on a trip by yourself, because most of us don't have any time to reflect in life. We're too busy with the, you know, the family or the kids or the job or errands or things we have to do. We don't spend a lot of time by ourselves thinking about who we are, who we want to be. Did I learn about myself? Unfortunately, I already knew a lot of my character flaws before the book began. So there wasn't a revelation about, oh, you're this, you're that, because I think I knew a lot of that then. But I think the most interesting thing from having written the book is that eventually, you know, I did get married to my fiance, and we were married for several years, but then we got divorced. And eventually I located the girl on page 144 that I hadn't seen in many, many years. And I talked with her on the phone for a few minutes. She says, "Why don't you send me a copy of the book?" And I did. And when she read that, she says, "I know exactly who you're talking about. Why don't we get together?" And now we're married. So that was the best that came out of this.
Page 144. We're going to make us look it up. Tell us more about this.
Well, I was
That's a great story.
Nowhere. Yeah, I was driving through the middle of nowhere, playing, you know, one of those lonely songs on the radio. And you have time to think when you're driving 2 hours and you see two cars, which you do in some of these places in Nevada. And, you know, I always want to wonder what happened to her. And eventually I, you know, looked her up and now we're together as we always should have been. So it's worked out real well. So I'd say that's the very best thing that happened out of that book.
You know, I was just rereading it today, and it, you know, I think it's really, really well written. And I think even people who are not blackjack players will appreciate it more as like a travel book, you know, kind of an off-the-wall travel book. And I've often said to people, you know, you mention in the book another book called I think it's called The Las Vegas Blackjack Diary or something like that by Stuart Perry. And I put those two books up as examples to people of the difference between writing and record keeping. because the Las Vegas Blackjack Diary, I couldn't get through it. I mean, it just is the most boring thing in the world to me. But your book, I just thought was really entertaining and really well written.
Well, thank you for that. You know, I started this book really not knowing if I was going to win or lose. I just wanted it to be interesting. And when stuff happened that I felt I should write about, I was going to write about it. Whether I looked good in that particular story or not didn't matter to me. I just wanted to keep it entertaining for people who might read it. Now, of course, there are always going to be some people that say, I don't like your jokes. Well, they've already told me that at the Comedy Store. I don't need, you know, additional people to tell me that. But I enjoyed writing it. I enjoyed having the adventure, and I sure hope that people read it as an entertaining travelogue. It's not a how-to. It's not dense pages of strategies. And, you know, the dealer had a six, and then I had an ace and a seven. Did I want a couple?
Right.
There's a little bit of that, because you have to, you know, explain to people that there actually is some strategy in this book. But basically, I think it's a travelogue, so it's something that everybody can relate to, that really anybody that's ever wanted to hit the open road, what would it be like if you're actually out there by yourself? What happens? That's what my goal was in writing this, not just... here's what you do if you've got two sevens against the seven.
You said in the first part of the interview that if you could do this again, you would. Well, why don't you do it in June of this year?
Well, I would do it again if I was that age and I had that life at that time. I would do it again.
It's hard to be that age again. That's a lot of things. I'd go back a couple more decades if I were going to pick another year, another age. But okay.
You know, I'm not going to do it now. But I do enjoy, as I said, going to casinos. Sometimes even making a day trip or an overnight trip, and playing a lot of casinos and seeing what's going on. I like to keep up on what's happening, but. You know, I'm older. I still like to have adventures. In fact, I'm going to go to Mongolia this summer by myself. So who knows what's going to happen there? I don't have any idea. I think that's an important part. The thing that I enjoy is doing something that I don't really know what's going to happen.
Are you planning to count cards in Mongolia?
I don't think there's count. I think you count yaks. I think
counting yaks and Kurds. Okay. Do you count Kurds in Mongolia?
That's about it. So... I don't think there's going to be much gambling on that trip, but I like doing things that are different, and I like things where I don't know exactly what's going to happen. I think it makes life more interesting that way.
I agree. Are you still writing?
I write things for myself. When something happens, I like to, I like to record it kind of for my own personal interest, not something I'm mailing out to magazines or something, but I just like... just like to write my experiences so I have it, you know, for myself. I'm probably going to be working on another book about horse racing because I don't think there's any really good horse racing handicapping book that covers all the latest discoveries in computer handicapping. And that's an area that interested me a lot when I was gambling on the horses full time. I did a lot of research on that, and that's going to be my next thing I do. Assuming that I actually, sit down and do it. I mean, I've got God knows how many hundreds of pages of notes. All I got to do now is actually do the work. And Richard, you know, having written books, and Bob, you as well, sitting down and doing the work is the hardest part.
Well, you're going to be forced to come on this show and talk about it, whether you do the book or not.
If you insist, I will.
Well, we do insist. Now, you mentioned Mongolia, and you don't look like a Mongol. And during this Nevada trip 15 years ago, some of these places were like 98% locals, and they didn't know you. So you're this outside guy who, I don't know if you were supposed to be a truck driver or what. So were you treated badly because you're a non-local?
No, but if you go to a place like Lovelock or a place like Wells, I mean, they're not going to have a lot of tourists flying in from Jordan or Egypt with stacks of cash.
Well, they could be tourists from Jackpot going to Wells.
Well, I don't know how many tourists go to Jackpot. I think most people just use that as a pass-through on their way from Idaho to somewhere else. There are a lot of places I went to that seemed to be places where everybody was going somewhere better. it's kind of like Barstow. Everybody's either going to LA or Las Vegas. Nobody's saying, you know what, I think this weekend I'll go to Barstow. So there are a lot of places like that. And, the fact that you don't know anybody, well, you meet people. You know, you talk with people and you meet them, and then eventually they kick you out and say, never come back to our town. But until then, you can enjoy yourself.
Very good.
Was your plan to play until you get kicked out, or what made you decide it's time to move on to the next town?
Well, sometimes it was getting kicked out, but usually it was, okay, I've learned what I had to learn about this town. I've had the experience of being here. I know what it's like. I know, you know, I've talked to people. I know what the building looks like. There didn't seem to be much point in staying around. I mean, I don't think I'd want to spend, 2 weeks in Ely, for example. There's just not much to do in these places. They're very small places. There's not much going on. And it's kind of like when you travel anywhere. I just got back from Tahiti, and there was a couple of islands over there that when you spent a day on the island, you know, you might as well spend, 10 years on the island because you've seen everything already. So then it's just repeating, and I don't like to repeat things a lot. So once I felt I had the experience of being in that town, off I moved to another town.
So your book was published by Huntington Press, Las Vegas Advisor. So you can definitely get it at lva.com. Is it on Amazon.com and elsewhere? Or?
It's on Amazon. It's still around after all these years. God knows why. But apparently there are still some people that enjoy it. And I think there are people that want to know. They kind of want to have that fantasy of what's it like going out on the road and playing cards. And I think if you read this book, you'll find out that it may not be all you think it's going to be. A lot of different things are going to happen.
Very good. Barry Meadow, we thank you for being on our show tonight. You're definitely going to be back talking about horse racing. And thank you very much for being here.
Well, thanks a lot for inviting me. And, you have a great idea for a show. It's important that when people – there's so much nonsense available in the gambling world that people need to hear from people that actually know what's going on. And, you guys do a real good job of doing that.
Well, thank you. And that, since you talk that way, you may have to be back on twice. All right. Thank you. So, Richard,
thanks,
what did we learn tonight?
Our listeners, I guess, learned that this is a really good book. They should pick it up. It's really entertaining.
You spent a lot of time on the road, and I assume a lot of his stories rang spot on. That's what it's like.
Yeah. And to me, for me, there's just nothing worse than being in a hotel room in the middle of nowhere by myself, especially after losing. I mean, even after winning, it's not that great,
There's a lot of things worse than that. Have you ever had appendicitis?
I just hate it.
Yeah. All right. So let's talk about our sponsors. The South Point has more than 10,000 video poker games, returning more than 99%. That's more than anybody else. During the month, there'll be 400,000 March Money Madness Progressive. The Progressive starts at $10,000 and keeps going up 24/7 until it's hit sometime before $25,000, where it's awarded to one of the players. Everybody who's actively playing at that point gets $25 in free play, or the jackpot. As soon as it hits, it starts over again at $10,000 and starts to climb. This coming Sunday, March 17th, St. Patrick's Day, is double point day, midnight to midnight. I am guessing the progressive will go off twice during that day, at least. It's generated by play. And there's a lot of extra play on double point day. So however much EV you normally get in by playing on double point days, that extra $25 you would get is additional EV. The free video poker class beginning this Tuesday at noon in the showroom is Bonus Deuces. This is we have three Deuces Wild games. We just did NSU last week. Bonus Deuces gives you more for five of a kind and only gives you single money for straights. The strategy is similar to NSU Deuces. The following week is going to be double bonus deuces. And there, that strategy is closer to full pay deuces wild. If you take both of these classes, you will learn such as what parts of the pay schedule to look for so that when you would hold a four-card flush over a pair or when you do it the other way around. When you're dealt two pair, do you hold both pairs or just one? And how do you know which is which? And in some games, it doesn't matter which pair you hold, and some games it does. And, you know, sometimes you go for four cards to a royal flush more aggressively than you do in other games. So you will learn why. So the more of these classes you go to, you will learn what part of the pay schedule to look for in order to be able to dissect the correct strategy. Most of us periodically find ourselves on a game that we don't know the strategy 100%. The more of the classes you're at, you'll be able to get close to it just because of some rules of thumb based on how much various pay schedule categories pay. At the Palms, the drawings on Friday and Saturday night are for a Volkswagen Jetta. They give away each Friday and Saturday, 10 people win $500 plus a key to the car, a virtual key, I guess. And Saturday night, those 20 people win at least $100, and one person wins the car. You can win once each night, Friday or Saturday, if you've played a bunch and are lucky. And so you can get a 1 in 10 chance at the car. It's a Volkswagen Jetta in round numbers. It's worth $18,000 if you take the car. It's worth $15,000 if you take cash or free play. Free play, interestingly, there's no 1099 on it. And so you will get $3,000 a week for 5 weeks. So those of us who play there regularly anyway, this is no big deal because we're going to be playing more than $3,000 a week through the machines. Some people from out of town, they're not going to be able to come back week after week. So they would either take the cash or drive home in a Jetta. The play, earn, and win for the last half of the month has a theme of light up my life. The top prize is a $100 gift card to Lowe's Hardware. You can also earn a toolbox, a fake fireplace, a kitchen clock, among other things. At videopoker.com, the monthly contest in March will be on the game Deal Draw Poker. This is a variation of double pay poker. On double pay, on both of the games, so I would call it an updated version of double pay poker. This is you are paid on the deal in a stud way, and then you also get paid on the draw. So the way Deal Draw Poker has changed it is, in the older version, sometimes it was unclear whether you were in the deal mode or the draw mode, and so you could accidentally hold nothing when you should have held something because you were confused about where you were in the game. In the double pay, if you hold nothing, you will get a note that says, in effect, are you sure you want to do this? And if so, you go ahead and hit the button again, and you're fine. And if you're not, you go, oops, I got to hold something. Now, this is the deal part of it is returns slightly more than the draw part of it. So, like, if you were playing 8-5 bonus poker, which normally returns round numbers 99.2, the draw poker part of it is 99.3 or 99.4. So it's a slight increase. Plus, the draw part of it always plays perfectly. So those of you who who don't know the strategy well, then on the draw part of it, which is going to be half your bet, that you get that full amount in the long term. On the deal part of it, you gotta play the hands right in order to get that. So those of you who are weaker than average players, if you can get the same game in the deal draw version rather than a straight version, your EV goes up. And it'll go up even higher if you are a bad player. All right. Next week, Our goal is to get Bob Nersessian. Bob has been on the show maybe more than any of the other guests, if you don't count Munchkin as a guest. Bob's a lawyer. He's the best player lawyer around. And right now, we're not 100% in contact with Bob. If he's in town, he will likely be here. If not, we will have a substitute guest. But there is one article in specific that we want to talk to Bob about videotaping or recording police or security guards. And so we're not going to talk about it at length now, other than to say that there are things you should keep in mind when you do it, and there's some smart ways to go about it, and there's some not so smart ways to go about it. But this is an interesting topic, whether you're a gambler or not, because even at a traffic stop or something, you may want to, if you get officer friendly, there's no problem. But if you get his evil brother on a bad day, you may want to have a recording of what goes on. So even if Bob doesn't show up next week, we'll probably talk about that.
Right. I mean, and definitely if you have interactions with police in a casino, you would like to record it as well. So even though they have security cameras that are recording you from the ceiling, it'd be great to have audio of that. Interesting distinction about whether, you know, security guards are, if that's considered a public conversation. And we can talk about that distinction with Bob when we have him on. But
by Bob Nersessian, yeah. Yeah, usually police officers are a special case in that it's legal to tape police officers going about their duties. Whereas if I'm taping somebody who doesn't know he's being taped, I might be violating his civil rights, and I might be committing a crime. So if a security guard isn't a police officer, then there might be trouble.
Well, another thing that's really interesting is
and we have about 1 minute, Munch.
Okay. Well, in some states, the law is that as long as one person knows. But in other states, both people have to know. But the question is, if you tell the security guard, I'm taping you, just so you know, I'm taping this conversation, and they tell you, turn it off. Well, they're not a police officer. Do they have the right to tell you to turn it off? Do you have to turn it off? I would think not. But that's what I'd like to talk to Bob about. You know, what if the security guard says, turn off your tape recorder?
I tend to think it's prudent to turn it off if he says it to turn it off. You may say,
I'd gamble. If it were me, I'd leave it on. Let him force me to turn it off. So,
let him get physical with you?
Well, I mean, I don't know. Woody, is he going to get physical over the recording? I don't know.
I don't know either. And some, like on your cell phone, it can look like you turn it off, but it's still going.
Right.
And then you can lie to him and go, yep, it's off now. Anyway, we got 10 seconds to go. Thank you very much for being here. Go out and hit lots of royal flushes, everybody.
Good night, all.
You've been listening to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin. Subscribe to the show in iTunes, and episodes will be delivered to you automatically every week. Archived versions of past shows may be found at bobdancer.com and richardmunchkin.com. We welcome emails at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com. Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin are both available on Facebook and welcome your questions. The sponsors for the show are the South Point Hotel, Casino, and Spa, the M Resort, the Palms Casino Resort, and the website videopoker.com. Join us again next week for another Gambling with an Edge.